Welcome to the Rookies Podcast, where we are three rookie pastors sharing all that we know, which is why we bring in professionals, because we don't know a whole lot. My name is Rio Taylor, and I'm joined today with my two normal co-hosts, Colin Coffey and Daniel Razor. And today, we are blessed to have Dr. Herschel York with us. Dr. York is the Dean of the School of Theology and the Victor Louise Lester Professor of Christian Preaching at the Southern Baptist Theological Seminary. Prior to 2024, he was also the pastor of the Buckrown Baptist Church, and at the beginning of 24, became the pastor emeritus. Dr. York travels all across the nation preaching and teaching preaching, and so we are thankful to have him on here today. He'll tell you his best accomplishment is that he is the husband of Tanya and that they have two children together, both in ministry. Dr. York, how was your past Sunday?
Great. Yesterday, I preached at the great Porter Memorial Baptist Church in Lexington. Church I've long known and admired, and of course I pastored in Lexington, and have a real great history with Porter Memorial. J.K. Pierce was the pastor there when I was both youth pastor at Ashland Avenue and then later pastor, and let's just say we swapped a lot of members. Sort of the two largest conservative churches in town. When people would get ticked at either of us, they'd go join the other one's church. And he and I used to laugh about it and make jokes about it. And we, both of us, some of our best members came from the other guy's church. So I owe a lot to Porter. Seriously, when I became pastor at Ashland Avenue in 1990, it had gone great. Dr. Brother Range, my predecessor at Ashland Avenue, was 73 when he retired. And the congregation had aged with him. In fact, there were about a three-year period before he retired where most of the young families left. A lot of them went to Porter. And I was gone those 3 years. I was down in going to seminary. And when he resigned and recommended the church, they called me back as pastor. It was a great congregation. And within a year, there was a huge influx of young families and couples from Porter Memorial because then J.K. was the old guy. They really helped me turn the church around. And I was thinking about that yesterday. Yesterday at Porter, there were probably 200 people there who I used to pastor at Ashland Avenue. So, you know, it was like old time.
Well, since you've stepped away from Buckrown from being the senior pastor and became the pastor emeritus, what has preaching ministry looked like for you for the past year?
Yeah, it's harder because, first of all, when you're a pastor, you're always preaching within the relationship you already have with people. And that just makes it easier. You know each other. There's just a lot of stuff you don't have to redo every time. You don't have to build trust or any of that. Get likable, you know. The other thing is you're preaching, like for me, there's a plan to it. There's a sequence. And usually for me, it was within books or large sections of books. That's no longer true. I'm preaching in churches where yesterday was an exception, but the 2 weeks before that, I preached in South Carolina and California and two churches in which I'd never been. And I didn't know anybody, and almost very few of them knew me or even knew who I was. And so from the get-go, you're building a relationship, you're earning their trust. The old Bird Decker thing, my co-author, you've got to be believed to be heard. So you have to know how to immediately get them on your side. That's a challenging thing to do week in and week out. And there's no continuity. Like somebody once said, the church in South Carolina wanted me to preach from 2 Corinthians. They specifically asked that, I think. And then, you know, the week before, they had asked for something else. And so every week I'm trying to remember what they asked me to do. And it's like, am I flying or driving this week? Is Tanya going with me? It's really challenging. The rhythm, the natural rhythm is gone. And now it's like every week is different. The task is different. Some weeks there's a men's conference and I'm preaching on Sunday. Sometimes it's a marriage conference Tanya does with me. Sometimes it's just a one-off. This coming weekend, I'm doing like a D now. I'm an old guy speaking to high school students and middle school students. But it is at Buckrun, so they're having me do that. And so I'm sure having to do something different for that. It's keeping me on my toes. There's no long-term cohesiveness to it. And it's a lot more difficult, frankly, because there's no relationship within which to pastor and minister.
Well, with that, because you've preached for decades as a lead pastor, and now you're still preaching, but as you said, it's harder because you're going to different churches every week. We tried a few months ago to have a podcast episode called What Makes a Good Sermon? And by the end of it, we three agreed we needed to bring on a professional to tell us what a good sermon was. So that's really the big question for today. Dr. York, what would you say makes a good sermon?
I'm going to give you two different answers. In general, I think a good sermon is one that really teaches the meaning of the text and makes appropriate application. I mean, things that you're going to make adjustments in your life after having heard it. But thirdly, it really engages the hearer. In other words, people come away, even if it's convicting and challenging, they come away going, I needed that. I liked that. That got connected with me. I think connection is a huge part of preaching. So to break it down to three things, text, sermon, delivery. I think for the oral event of a sermon, you need to know that the guy really taught the text accurately and that he put it in a form that had a logical progression and an argument to it that the audience could follow, and that he was very engaging. Like, he kept them with him. They wanted to listen to him. You know, they're not looking around. They're not checking out their phones. They're not doing text messages. I mean, they're dialed in. That to me is sort of both the evidence and the thing that really creates a good sermon.
When you have a guy, or I don't know if this has ever happened to you, where you've kind of got sermon block and you're struggling to get together an outline and a sermon that you enjoy or that people enjoy, how do you counsel that pastor, or how do you get out of it yourself?
Yeah, just do it anyway. There's so much of life, especially this generation, is looking for some kind of a feeling in things. Popular culture and social media and Hollywood and everything else has told you there ought to be some magnificent feeling with it. It's baloney. It's not the way it works. Life doesn't work like that. You know, it never feels good to change your baby's diapers unless you're just completely weird. And you got to do it. And there's love in it. There's a joy underneath it. That's your baby, right? This is my wife and I had this child. I don't enjoy this task, but it fits into a larger thing that is just absolute joy and delight. And I think preaching is like that. When you can't, you know, it's not coming together. At the very least, you can get up and tell what that text means and tell people how to apply it to their lives. It may not be as artistic as you want. And frankly, it's always better in my head than it is in the pulpit. I mean, that's just never not true. So, you just do the next thing. You do the right thing. You get up and you preach it. And next week, hopefully, it'll be better. But get out of this thing about, oh, it's got to ring some bell or meet some impossible standard or be like your hero or something. That's just not realistic. So there are those weeks you just go, man, I'm sucking air here. There is, you know, you just don't feel good about it. Well, you get something down on paper and you get up and you preach it anyway and pray that the Lord will use it and bless it. I've had those experiences, and it was the thing. It's like I've been stunned when people got saved and moved and repented and everything else as a result of a sermon that I just felt awful about. And then sometimes, man, you go, this is it. I nailed it this week. And you get up and it's just flat. So you sort of get over yourself and you just realize the power is the text, is the word and the spirit. And those two are present and available no matter how you're doing. And just rely on that.
One of my favorite memes is this old confused man looking down at a piece of paper going, I felt really good about this sermon. Nobody walked forward. Nobody said anything. I felt terrible about this sermon. 10 people got saved. I have no earthly idea what I'm doing. That's one of my favorite preaching memes. It's 100% accurate.
Yeah.
But with prep, and I think Colin asking kind of about writer's block, I think one of the things that I know I struggle with, I know others struggle with as well, is illustrations in sermons, how to do those well. And I'd say this if you weren't here, but I think you personally are one of the best illustrators in preaching, and that you seem to have always a great illustration to highlight the text. How do you go about collecting those and having these illustrations? I mean, kind of what's that process for you?
Yeah, I work hard at it. And frankly, there's no off position on the illustration seeking mode. You've got to always be attentive and looking and listening. You know, Michael, my son, one time said to me, man, you've just had this incredible life. All this incredible stuff has happened to you. I said, well, true though that may be, that's not the source or the secret of my good illustrations. It's that I notice things. And if you look at some of my best illustrations, like from my personal life, they're not dramatic. They're not some big thing. It's like, it's a small event, but I see something in it. I know how to use it. I know how to turn it, you know, and I tell it, whether it's like finding an old pair of shoes that Tanya had taken away from me in the closet and putting them on a Sunday morning. You know, I mean, I make that into a story. The other thing is, so much of a great illustration is in the telling. Honestly, I think guys who know how to tell an illustration well, that's more than half the battle. You can put the same story or illustration in somebody else's mouth and it won't work. It'll fall flat because they don't tell it well. So I would tell you, I'm always looking, I'm always listening, I'm noticing things. I know how to use it, I know how to apply it in different ways, and I think I work hard on basically storytelling technique. I listen to things like the Moth podcast and national storytelling competitions. Listen to people who know the narrative art. And I try and do that. I think that's the big thing. So one thing I'll tell you, don't ever buy an illustration book or subscribe to an illustration service. They're terrible. They're uniformly terrible. The things that I look for are things nobody else is looking at. And books, I'll read a book. Thursday, I preached in chapel at Southern, and I used a little essay from a book called Mortal Lessons. I heard that decades ago. It's killer. But I will tell you, if you watch it, you see that, like, I'm all in, act out. There, you know, the woman in the essay, this doctor's cut a nerve in a woman's mouth, and she has a twisted mouth. And so when I do her voice, I do that mouth. You got to do that. You got to be all in. You can't be timid when you're doing illustrations well. And that's part of it. So it's finding them, telling them well, knowing how to use them. What I don't do is, you know, find some great story and make it fit when it really doesn't. I'm willing to be patient and wait for when it does fit. You know, guys will go to a conference or something here, great illustration and story. Oh, I got to use that Sunday. Well, maybe it doesn't fit in your sermon Sunday, but they'll still do it, just like to interrupt the sermon for 5 minutes with a great story, but it has nothing to do with the sermon. Say, don't ever do that. That's just sheer performance. That's not really preaching. That's not furthering the text. That's always in service of the text. And if that's not your purpose, you shouldn't do it.
I'm kind of just reflecting on, I mean, I went to Southern, took a bunch of the preaching classes, just how much time, I guess, is spent on how to have a good illustration. I think that's one of the things, maybe some of the young men in my church that are learning to be preachers and teachers, they want to have a high emphasis on good exegesis. And I think they prioritize that well. But especially some of the young men I'm trying to help along with their preaching and teaching, trying to help them understand the power of a good illustration and how it illustrates the text and not just tells a good story, or as you described. So I want to kind of ask, in my context, go ahead.
Yeah. Yeah, I just really emphasize, it's always got to be about the text. It's not about your sermon. It's always about the text.
Let me ask you this. I'm really blessed right now to have several young men and older men in my church right now. The Lord is called to preach and to teach. So what wisdom would you give to some pastors who are training maybe some lay teachers or some young pastors, young preachers, teachers, when it comes to preaching and teaching, without the opportunity for them to ever attend a seminary, what can we do like in the local church to better train some of our preachers and teachers?
Well, I think it's a life that preaches, and I think you invite them in. I mean, I can't emphasize this enough. If you're really going to be a disciple of any kind, you're going to give up your own right to privacy and aloneness, and that's hard for some of us. It's certainly been a struggle for me. And yet, you know, Jesus said, unless a grain of wheat falls into the earth and dies, it remains alone. And it's like Jesus saying, the worst possible thing that can happen is it to remain alone. But if it dies, oh, it bears fruit. And I think when you die to your sense of your zone of privacy and sense of, you know, self, then you say, okay, I'm going to invite these guys into my life. I'm going to let them see my sermon prep. Let them see my devotional life. Let them see the way I treat my wife, love my kids. And I'm going to let my life be shared by them so that they see what a pastor's life and preaching life is like. I think that's when the Lord really uses it. Now, frankly, there are some guys that they don't want to do that because they're hiding stuff in their life they don't want seen or known. Well, that's a very different problem, isn't it? But frankly, I have liked the accountability that comes with. You know, I got two guys who read all my email, my phone, and my text messages. It's like, I don't have any zone of privacy. I've charged something on my credit card. She gets a notice on her phone. So, you know, once you just give up your right to all that stuff and say, I'm going to use my life to disciple others and bring them along with me and teach them, here's what the preaching and pastoring, husbanding life looks like. I think that's when, first of all, it keeps you accountable. You know, you're not going to be having an affair when there are that many people in your life. You're not even going to think about it. You're not going to have time for it. And by God's grace, I've had way too public a life and way too busy a schedule to fall into certain sins and patterns of sin. And that's been to my benefit. So that's what I would tell you, man. Just like use your life, let them in, let them see the way you prepare, treat your wife, and letters you write to your church members and all that stuff. Just let them in and it'll teach them, disciple them, and hold you accountable simultaneously, all of which is good stuff. It's exactly the way Jesus lived, by the way.
You know, with Daniel asking that question about how would you train lay people, I think one of the newer difficulties we have is something you've been writing about or been talked to about, and I'd love to get your thoughts on it. The use of AI in preaching, to where men are doing that, and it's kind of like it's a easier way to sermon prep, but I know you're against guys using that, do your own work, but I would just like to say, what are your thoughts on the use of AI?
Well, first of all, you know, I'm not impressed with AI yet. I don't know how else to say it. Can AI give me a lot of facts? Yeah, they can. Well, sort of, maybe. First of all, I can right now pull up ChatGPT and give it a word problem with clearly defined parameters, and it will give me a wrong answer. It's crazy. And it will argue vehemently that, you know, but and when I call it on it, it's like, no, I said this word has to end in a T. You gave me a five-letter word that ended in a T. Oh, I'm sorry. Like, so are you really going to trust the thing that can't even spell right to write a sermon? Furthermore, I mean, it does. It just lies. It has hallucinations, they're called, and will argue that it's right. I asked ChatGPT, hey, prepare a sermon from Romans 9, 1 through whatever, in the style of Herschel York. It can describe to me who Herschel York is and what he would do. But it sort of tells me what I would do, but what it can't do is do it. It can't do it. And like I can say, write an essay on the sewage system of Frankfort, Kentucky, in the style of Joan Didion. And it will tell me sort of what Joan Didion did. What it can't do is write it like Joan Didion. I mean, so I'm just saying, if your preaching is merely regurgitating some Bible facts, ChatGPT is going to do you great because that's all you're doing anyway. And I just think, of course, that's not what I'm going for. That's what I thought preaching were. I would buy everybody in my church a set of Matthew Henrys and be done with it. They don't even need me. But that's not what it is. It's shepherding. And ChatGPT can't shepherd your people. It doesn't know the hurts of your people. So, you know, it's a tool. Like if you need ChatGPT, you know, like I'm looking up an illustration or something like that, and I use ChatGPT in a similar way I would use Google. Like, give me a little snippet of something. Okay. I'm not saying that's wrong or dishonest or anything, but ChatGPT, no AI can write a sermon with the art of a Robert Smith or the faithfulness and style of an Alistair Begg. You just can't do it. And, you know, I'm not seeing anything remotely close to it yet. So that's why I think, you know, lazy guys always find a way to be lazy. Lazy guys will buy a book of sermons by Herschel Ford back in the 60s, and lazy guys in the 2020s will use ChatGPT. There's always a way for lazy preachers to be lazy. But guys who love the word and love their people are not content with any of that stuff. You know, they want to make their own perfume. You know, they want to grind the roses. They want to come up with the exact recipe of this and how to deliver it. So, yeah, I would just tell the guy, you know, if you're trying to be lazy, you're going to find a way to do it with or without artificial intelligence. But, man, if you love your people and you love the word, you're not going to be content doing that.
So I'll ask this one just, so would you say kind of the same danger of using ChatGPT to write your sermons can be the same danger of using commentaries where your sermon just becomes a running commentary of the text and not really explaining the text to the people for application?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, that's just being a commentator. That's not what God called us to do. We're not preachers who shepherd. We're shepherds who preach. And you get that straight. You know, they can always find a better preacher than me on the internet, and they can find a better exegete than me, a better commentator than me, but they can't find somebody who's going to walk through life with them. That's my job. And, you know, my first funeral at Buck Run was on Christmas Eve, 2003. I preached the funeral of a 23-year-old man, a young man who committed suicide, son of one of my deacons. Do you think they needed commentary, or that, you know, if that were today, that I could just ask, hey, ChatGPT, crank me out a sermon for the comfort of family whose son committed suicide? I mean, get real, man. You know, I've been at Buck Run 2 weeks, and I'm like trying to figure out how can I get these people to let me in. They were still grieving Bob Jackson leaving, you know, my predecessor. And now they lose a son to suicide. Funeral's on Christmas Eve. I mean, does it get worse than that? I preached the funeral of a baby one time that the father rolled over on in bed and crushed the baby. And it's like, honestly, you think Matthew Henry can deal with that? Or, you know, a John Stott commentary? That's the work of a shepherd, and you're the one who can take that word and speak to that need as the one who bridges these things and connects these things. So, you know, it's the work of being a shepherd that makes all the difference. We're not just trying to build sermons. We're shepherding people. It's a very different task than merely preaching a sermon.
Colin, you're still muted, bud.
Sorry. Yeah. I'll be quick. What do you want to see less of in pulpits that you're seeing today?
I don't know. Let's see. This would be true anywhere, but pride. You know, my own included. It's not me making a judgment on a generation or something. It's just like, man, if we could just get pride out of the pulpit. Just preach with the humility of Jesus. You know, wow. It's a, really is toxic. It really is deadly. And it really is out of place in a pulpit. And I'm saying this as much to me as anybody, but you know, if we can get pride out of the pulpit, that's what I'd like to see left.
Well, Dr. York, we appreciate your time with us and for helping us tell our listeners, the dozens of them, what makes a good sermon. And so as we wrap up, I just have a couple quick questions for you that, you know, I want to ask you first. You've been preaching for decades, and I'm just curious, and I know the guys are too, what have been your favorite books of the Bible or maybe sermon series that you've preached in your time of preaching?
Luke, I love Luke. That's my favorite thing I ever did. 2 years through Luke, it was, in my view, best thing I ever did. It was definitely the most enjoyable. So Luke was it.
I remember your sermon over Mary and Joseph leaving Jesus behind and going back. And I'm listening, and I remember you ended it with, there was another 3 days where Mary thought she lost her son. And look, when I'm driving through Ashland and I start crying in my car because I'm so moved, I'm like, dadgummit, I never made that connection. I feel dumb not making that connection, but I'd agree. Your Luke series was really good. Your Son of the Prodigal Son especially was a highlight to me on that. But
I just loved it. It was a well that doesn't run dry. And it was just so, so rich. I just fell in love with Luke. What's funny is I don't feel the same way about Acts. You know, Acts is hard for me. Luke just like, it just fit. Yeah, it's my favorite.
Well, with that other, I guess the other side of that question is, what's been a book you've preached through where you go, I really don't like how I did that, or I didn't enjoy that as much?
There's been several of those. I will tell you, the second half of Daniel is as hard as it gets. And, you know, man, Daniel 11 is like, are you kidding me? You know, you start out in Daniel and it's all the Hebrew children and the lion's den. And, wow. And then you get to, you know, 10, 11, 12. It's like, oh my goodness, this is hard. So that, and I never preached Ezekiel. Excuse me. Yeah, I never preached Ezekiel because it was too daunting to me. I don't know what to do the second half of Ezekiel, the temple. And so though I didn't do it, that I'm confident I would not have done it well. In Second Peter, it's just like, okay, this week, again, these guys are bad. They're really, really bad. Next week's sermon, these guys are bad. They're so bad. I mean, it's just like, how many times do we have to say they're bad? And he just goes on and on about these false teachers. And, you know, you got like 5 weeks of look out for these guys. They're bad. So that was hard. You know, it's just hard to, but, you know, I trusted our people needed. The problem lies not with the text. I mean, be clear, the problem lies with my ability to present it in a way that needs to be presented.
Well, again, we appreciate you coming on here and talking with us for a bit. As this one final wrap-up question, we try to ask all of our guests who come on here that on this podcast this question. We have some guys who are listening who are just starting off in ministry. We're called the Rookies for a reason. If you could give just one piece of advice to all of our listeners, even to us three right now as rookie pastors, what would be the biggest piece of advice you would give?
It's hard to narrow down to one, but, you know, I would say relax and enjoy it. Don't be so. I just see a lot of guys are just hard on themselves, their level of expectation of themselves, and thinking some bells and whistles should go off, you know. To understand it's a life that preaches. It's a long-term thing. Don't be trying to knock it out of the park every time. Just try and be faithful. Lighten up. Don't be so heavy. Don't take yourself seriously. Take the word seriously. Take the gospel seriously. Don't take yourself seriously. Those are the kinds of things that I needed to say to my younger self, and I would say to guys that are starting out today.
I think it's a great reminder. There is a burden when it comes to pastoring and preaching, but I think those that are called to it, there's nothing else that we'd rather do, that it's what God has created us for, and it's a joy and a blessing. As we wrap up, again, thank you for joining us. It's been just fun getting to visit and listen. And then I just want to give you the opportunity. You host a much better podcast, I think, than we do. Do you want to share a little bit about the Pastor Well?
Yeah, I love Pastor Well podcast simply because I get to talk shop. And usually it's directed toward preachers, but frankly, it actually tends to go far beyond them. I get emails and texts and everything else from a lot of women who listen and just say thank you, especially pastors' wives. It helps them understand. But then a lot of it's just stuff Christians need. So, you know, I'm the first seasons I did interviews and I enjoyed that. But that's always dependent on getting to be around people. And so then we just started going to shorter takes on my take on issues in ministry and the stuff I want to talk about, leaving a legacy. I think today, the one that came out today is on basically how to serve communion, fencing the table. I talk about open and closed communion and all that. And, you know, I just like talking shop like that. And it's helpful. Guys can listen to it. You know, should a guy ever be restored? If a guy messes up morally, can he ever be restored? Can he ever pastor again? That I think that episode got more hits than anything because a bunch of Theo bros jumped on that one and it got hits, you know. So, but it's York's opinion. So take it for what it's worth. I'm basing it on the Word of God. Obviously, some of it is interpretive, but I love doing it. I love talking shop and throw it out there. If it's a blessing and help to you, praise the Lord.
We trust that it is. Well, thank you again for joining us and for our listeners and viewers. Thank you. And thank you, Dr. York. And we'll see you all soon. Bye, everybody.